The microphone over to Andrew Norton to finish up the finalization, if that's your desire to move.
Yes, please. Thank you. Yep. Okay, that's great. Yep. Welcome, sir.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the Commission. So, yeah, for our listening audience, I'm Andy Lindblom, Senior Big Game Biologist at Rapid City. And today I'm here to provide some updates on winter severity and depredation. It's just easier this way than looking over at him. So last time we met, we provided some recommendations on license numbers, and you see here today in front of you, we are proposing some adjustments to those license numbers. So the information that I provide to you today regarding winter severity and depredation, I believe will provide some background information on why we're making or recommending some alterations to the proposal. All right, so just first talking about winter severity. Last time I talked about the fact that we do come up with a winter severity index, or a WSI value, which is a combination of snowfall and temperatures from November to April 30th. We get those data from NOAA, and we don't have them yet, so I don't have an update on the WSI value from us. But I do want to talk about another form of WSI, and that's from the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. They develop an accumulated winter season severity index, so something very similar to what we do. They look at temperature, precip, snowfall, and snow depth. And they don't have as many stations as we do for our WSI, but they have quite a few in South Dakota, and I want to point out a couple of them here today. So the first one, just looking at, I believe this is the Aberdeen station. So this is their winter severity index over time. So you can see it starting in about December there, winter weather started hitting. And you can see their value, the black line is where we're at right now and where we were across the winter. We've been bouncing between an extreme and severe winter for the entire year up in Aberdeen. So no big surprise to us, but it definitely coincides with what we've been seeing. The same with their quantified WSI for Sioux Falls. Again, they were bouncing around that severe and extreme level, and they ended up being an extreme winter down there as well. And no surprise to us, that's what we've been seeing. But this is really important that we quantify winter severity, because this allows us to better quantify what that means to our deer herds, right? And so one of the ways we do that, of course, is through radio-collared animals. And we estimate survival, but when we don't have radio-collared animals, we also rely on reported mortalities. And we talked about this last month, but this is an update from last month. So last month I reported a little over 100 reports of reported dead deer, and these are from the public to our staff. And that was about 700-something deer on the ground that we verified as dead. And as of right now, we're over 1,500 dead deer. And this is some of the data that we looked at and evaluated when we brought you some recommendations to change some of those license numbers from our proposal. Again, this is not our estimate of total deer losses, but it does give us a relative value of losses from year to year, and it also gives us an idea of the spatial distribution of those winter mortalities. So if I can get this to work, I do just want to give an example of what some of the field staff have been seeing out there as they investigate these winter mortalities. This was obviously part of a shelter belt, and there was some hay there as well. But it's a little choppy, but a lot of dead deer and some pretty morbid sights. And definitely this winter had a substantial impact on our deer herds in a lot of areas in eastern South Dakota. And I'm not trying to play it again. I'm trying to go past it. There we go. So not only was it a long winter for our deer herds in the eastern part of the state, but it was also a long winter for a lot of our landowners. And this was a big deer depredation year for us. We had over about 570 requests for services regarding deer depredation. And our department expended nearly $1 million on trying to abate those damages that these winter concentrations were having. Emma Keyser did provide a good overview of what some of those techniques and products that we used to abate those damages, but needless to say, it was a busy year for a lot of our staff and a lot of the landowners trying to address deer depredation. This is the final map that we have showing where those deer depredation calls came in across the state. Of course, no surprise, this is relative to winter severity, which definitely shows up in the eastern part of the state, but also deer densities and land ownership as well does have a play in these density maps. So coming off a hard year of deer depredation, without a doubt, does drive some of our objectives in some of those areas. These are the objective maps for white-tailed deer, looking at the last time we did recommendations in 2021 versus now in 2023. And I just want to kind of focus your attention to, if I can, the eastern part of the state there. Last time in 2021, most areas, with the exception of the far northeast, most areas we wanted more white-tailed deer. And you compare that with now, coming off a hard winter, where social tolerance has been reduced because of depredation concerns, most of those areas were either at enough deer or we actually want to reduce the herds. And so this is a really important factor. This isn't just a change of a color on a map, right? These objectives really drive the numbers that you have in front of you. We're studying license numbers to try and meet these objectives in each one of our deer units. I just want to go through an example of kind of how we do that. So this is a growth rate chart, and this is basically just it's a summary table of a whole bunch of population model runs based on the best deer data we have. And this allows us to look at the biological data in order to try to set license numbers to meet our objectives. So if you see the red on the map, those signify areas where the deer population would be decreasing. So any number less than one means a growth rate that's a decreasing growth rate. So like a 0.95 would be a 5% annual decrease. If the areas are blue, that means an increase. Same thing, if it's like a 1.05, that'd be a 5% annual decrease. So what we're trying to do is match our biological data with our license numbers to fall in basically into those areas where we've identified our management objectives. So for example, the top row is recruitment. We have three example bins of what possible recruitment could be in the state, from a low to a medium to a high. And we get these data from our herd composition surveys. And then the next row is we also bin three different levels of annual survival for our female population. Again, a low, average, and a high. And then we look at, well, what do we want to set for license numbers? What's the female harvest rate? What proportion of the female population do we want to harvest? And we determine that by license numbers. And we look at that harvest rate in order to meet those objectives. So a quick example of how we do that. Let's take northeast South Dakota, for example. We have really high recruitment in northeast South Dakota. Without a doubt, it's one of the highest recruitment areas in the state. 100 fawns per 100 does is nothing unusual up there. So that would automatically put us in that far bin to the right. And then we look at survival. On an average winter, for example, if you go all the way down those columns to the bottom row, on an average winter, if we didn't harvest any does, so 0% of the population, we should grow, based on the biological data we have, about 22% a year. If we wanted to stabilize that population or maintain that population, in that situation, you can go up to 20%. We'd have to harvest 20% of the does in order to stabilize that population, basically. Now, you take a winter like right now that we just went through, we don't have average survival. Survival has definitely decreased, so that put us in that low bin, for example. So, again, if we don't harvest any does in some of those units, we're basically maintaining the population. So that's why the license numbers comparing from year to year may not make sense if you don't realize what we're doing with those adult survival, and we really have to account for that. So I just want to give you a quick example of what some of the biological data means and how we use that to set license numbers. And one quick other example, if you go to the other end of the state, like the Black Hills, for example, much lower recruitment. If we don't harvest, if we have an average survival winter and we don't harvest any deer, any does, we're going to be growing about 4%. So our license numbers really have to reflect those differences in growth rates. So to sum it up, we do have some changes from proposals. Our May deer season recommendation is to, of course, to retain the original April recommendations of 3,300 fewer firearm licenses, but we're also recommending a further reduction up in the Northeast because of these additional deer that we've been documenting that have died on the landscape. And you can see a map here that shows some of the relative densities of where those changes in licenses are taking place. But in overall, we're recommending about 1,450 additional licenses be removed, or in other words, about 2,000 less doe tags and about 300 less any deer tags. And that's all I have for updates. Any questions?
Very good. Any questions for Andy or comments? Commissioner Whitmire.
Thank you. What a challenge. We kind of saw this start up in December already this year and started hearing reports about the deer depredation early on, and boy, it just continued, especially in the eastern part of the state there, and earlier on in the western. I mean, it was just a winter, and what a challenge for you guys. So thank you. Appreciate the work you guys put into it, and thank you all for all the hard work. And I mean, it's not easy to figure that, and I understand that. So thank you for the work.
Thank you.
Yeah, very, very hard to see. Any other questions or comments?
Madam Chair?
Yes, Commissioner White.
Thank you, Madam Commissioner White. This information is, I think, essential for the success of the future. I think sportsmen need to hear this, whether we make presentations to sportsmen's clubs or get it out into the magazines, so they acknowledge that they are part of the solution by acknowledging that they aren't going to be getting opportunity to maybe get an analyst permit or whatever, but we're just that faction that you're using as far as maintaining by not having any has got to be a sobering effect for any land or any sportsman that's out there. So somehow or another, I think it's important that our sportsmen across South Dakota, especially in that corner of the state, recognize that they're part of the solution by helping us not take those applications this year or not having those applications available. It's no discipline to them. It's just to help our growth of those particular areas. And we need to have the sportsmen understand how serious this was.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Commissioner Spring.
I was wondering if you had any statistics on what the fawn loss was of the deer with this tough winter. I mean, did we lose a lot, or has there been any counts? And also, I was wondering, with the stress on them, are we going to have a low fawn survival this spring because of the does being run down so bad? Do you have any statistics or ideas on any of that?
Madam Chair. Yeah, Commissioner Spring, I some good comments there and questions. One of the things that we see when we investigate these mortalities is right off the bat, the high proportion of the mortalities are fawns. That's the first age class that you're going to start to lose in a hard winter. And that's the most variable survival we see from year to year is that fawn age class, because they're most susceptible to winter losses. It's when you start to lose those adults, like we are this year in some parts of the state, that's when it really becomes a concern and you're having a hard winter, because usually their survival is pretty consistent. But yeah, without a doubt, we've lost a lot of fawns. We don't have a way to estimate that without collared animals, but we do know a high proportion of our fawns have been lost, and I think we need to account for that. I agree with your comments on what that might mean for the future. I think there's a lot of unknowns with that. If we get a nice spring and some good green up and some good forage, some of those does that are in bad condition right now could be all right and they could do just fine for fawning. But if we were to hit another drought and they're coming off a hard winter,
That's going to be really bad for deer recruitment, there's no doubt, because those does are in tough shape. And I think, let's keep our fingers crossed for some good forage production this spring.
Yes, Commissioner Bartling.
Thank you, Commissioner Bartling. How long do you expect to see this decrease in these tags? Do you look to see this to be for a several-year period so that the population can rebuild itself, especially if the fawn population has been diminished greatly?
Through the chair.
Yes.
Commissioner Bartling. That's a good question. So these recommendations are for 2 years. And so, that's what we would recommend, is to decrease the licenses. And of course, we'll be monitoring some of the survival rates and also recruitment over the next 2 years, because that's really going to drive what these populations are going to do. If we had a couple years of a really good recruitment, we can bounce back really quick, especially whitetails. We can have fawns having fawns, basically. And they can bounce back really quick, but that's yet to be seen, so we don't know what that's going to be. So, we'd recommend let's hold true for a couple years if we can and see where we stand then.
All right, very good. So at this time, we need a motion and a second to approve. Moved by Commissioner Whitmire, second by Commissioner Beese. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? It is approved. Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Welcome. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, Commissioners. I'm Andrew Norton, Wildlife Program Administrator, and follow up with Andy's presentation here and go through some of the specific action sheets to be finalized, starting on page 41 of the Commission Book, agenda item number 13. So this will be the third time you're seeing these, and not much change, so I won't spend a lot of time. First one being West River Prairie deer hunting season. No recommended changes since the proposal second reading last month. Just a minor rule cleanup on a road change, and then what I had discussed with the change to Fort Meade BLM property. This would apply for the youth seasons as well, which would open up that season to hunting for the West River Deer Firearm Unit, as well as the apprentice, mentor, and youth season, which I'll get into in the next action sheet. But this only opens it to archery. No firearms could be used there. So if you would, we'd need to take action on each one of these individually before I get into the actual license changes, which I'll bring all of those together, and then just one single action could be taken on that. So at this point, I can take any questions for the West River Prairie deer hunting season.
Any questions for Andrew? No questions. So we need to take, Commissioner Spring, did you have a question?
There you go. I was wondering, on percentages of the last year or normal tag amounts, was there a lot of units that you cut down to 40-50% or not, or could you maybe say some of them that you had cut way back?
Through the chair?
Yes, please.
So I can go through a lot of those particular units once I get to the actual license changes, which will be once we go through these first five seasons, then I'll go through the actual unit license change numbers. So I can either go through those right now, or we could wait till we get to the license change numbers.
That'd be fine, whatever way you want to do it. I would just okay. Like to hear some of that is all.
Yeah, I'll definitely do that.
So we need to go through now and make a motion to approve. Can you just tell us exactly which ones we're looking at here?
So right now we are on page 41, agenda item number 13, West River Prairie deer hunting season.
Yep. Okay. So we need a motion and a second. Moved by Commissioner B, seconded by Commissioner Bartling. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? All right, that is approved, yes.
Thank you. So moving on to page 44, this is the apprentice hunter deer season. This will be the exact same as the youth hunter deer season, which will be the next action item. This is just simply that same change to Fort Meade BLM property. Again, these rule changes just apply to the unit and the season length, not the license numbers.
Very good. Any questions for Andrew? Looks like there are no questions. We need a motion and a second. Moved by Bartling. Seconded by Spring. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? It is approved.
Thank you. Moving on to page 47, youth deer hunting season, the same exact changes I mentioned with the apprentice deer hunting season.
We need a motion and a second. Moved by Whitmire.
Second.
Second by Locken. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? It is approved.
Thank you. So two more to go here. This one on page 50 is the only one that's changed since the second reading last month. This is Custer State Park deer hunting season. The original change was to open the entire month of November up, which is going to be the any whitetail hunting season, to firearm hunting. Before, it was the first 2 weeks were archery only, and then the last 2 weeks were firearm and archery. So now it's just opening up that whole month. There's limited number of licenses in that unit. Only 20 will be proposed when you see coming up here in the license numbers. The change since last month was just simply a clarification that in rule it said the season is open from November 1 to December 15th, and we just added a sentence to recommend adding some structure there that the month of November is the any whitetail or, if they're available, any deer licenses. So basically your buck hunting season, whereas the December 2 weeks is your antlerless only hunting season.
Okay. Any questions on that change? We need a motion and a second. Moved by Commissioner White.
Second.
Second by Commissioner Lockett. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? It is approved.
Thank you. Last one here, the refuge deer hunting season on page 52.
Madam Chair, sorry to interrupt. Tom yes. Kirschman. So on that, just backing up, sorry, on that Custer State Park, because there was a recommended change, your motion that you did would be for the modification or the amendment, and now you would need a final one on the amended proposal, just to make sure that we have it all covered.
Very good.
In the meeting minutes. Thank you.
So at this point, then, we would need another motion to approve for the finalization of it. So moved by Locken, second by Bartling. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? It is now finalized. Thank you.
Thank you,
Director.
Thank you, Director Kirschman. So moving on to page 52, the refuge deer hunting season, no changes since the second reading last month, and that was just to restrict Sand Lake season number 4 to muzzleloader only, and you'll see subsequently that the idea there is to switch antlerless licenses to any whitetail licenses, and then just to allow La Creek refuge staff to specify the unit boundaries.
Any questions? A motion and a second. Moved by Whitmire. Second by Bartling. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? It is approved.
Thank you. So now I'll go through the specific license changes. I'll go through all the seasons. There will be 8 different seasons, and then I can open up to questions if that's the best approach. That starts on page 55 with the archery access permits. The only change to the access permits is in Custer National Forest, Unit 35L, where there is a reduction by 20% in those any deer archery access permits. So going from 500 resident access permits to 400 and 125 non-resident permits to 100. Moving on to muzzleloader deer, page 56, no changes to the 1,000 licenses available. Page 57, Black Hills deer was a 8% decrease to the any whitetail licenses, and moving from 300 antlerless whitetail licenses to 0, that subsequently would close the archery and muzzleloader antlerless hunting in the Black Hills as well. Page 58, Custer State Park, very similar to the Black Hills, was a 20% decrease in the any whitetail licenses from 25 to 20. And eliminating the antlerless whitetail from 50 to 0. Page 59 is the refuge deer. I discussed this briefly with Sand Lake. That is the only change, so you can see in the bottom of that second table below, refuge Sand Lake number 4 goes from 0 any deer licenses to 20, and then eliminates the 25 antlerless whitetail licenses to 0, so switching that over and then making that muzzleloader. Getting into West River deer and to Commissioner Spring's comment, If you go to page 62, would probably be the easiest to see the comparison. Hopefully the numbers are big enough. It's tough getting all these statistics on one page. But if you go to 62, you can see each unit is in that first column, and then the county name or the unit name is followed in the second column. And if you just look at the column 3 and 4, that shows the change from the last recommendation to this biennial recommendation coming up. The following column is the number of licenses that changed, and then exactly to Commissioner Springs' question, the percent change. So, for example, if you go down about three-quarters of the way to unit 49B, you can see that last year there were 1,300 licenses, and that recommended change is down to 700, which would be a 46% reduction. That percent reduction was similar across a lot of the western units in the state. Once you get closer back to the river, Commissioner Bartling's county there in Gregory County, not much changed there because weren't as poor conditions out west where we saw a lot more hemorrhagic disease and we saw some poor fawn recruitment. So again, can go through any particular units there. Custer County, for example, there was a 60% cut in licenses. Bennett County, 50%. Meade County to the west, 49A, was a 39%. Fall River County, 47%. Again, a few counties increased. Notably, those were Lyman and Corson, I believe. Then moving on to East River Deer, that would be on page 63 and 64. These were a lot of the changes that Andy discussed. On 64, you can see the similar percentage increases. I maybe won't necessarily go through all of those, but if you go to page 65, you can see those exact changes that Andy discussed in that map that he showed with the colors, where a lot of the counties in northeastern South Dakota where we're seeing some extensive winter kills since last month, there were some additional cuts, and those primarily occurred in the form of reducing single antlerless licenses or switching double antlerless licenses to single antlerless licenses. And so that should be all the specific unit license changes that are recommended, and I can take any questions at this time.
Any questions at this time? Any comments? Looks like there are, Director.
Madam Chair, if I may.
Yeah.
Tom Kirschman, Director. So two quick things I just want to remind you all on these license allocations. So the question was asked earlier staff responded, it is a two-year recommendation, but please understand, if we see something catastrophic, whether it's because of weather conditions or disease outbreak, a major EHD outbreak or whatever it might be, again, please understand, there's always the ability to come back and make adjustments before that two-year time frame, and we have done that before, right, because of circumstances. So I just want to remind you that that's not etched in stone. We see something happening out there, staff can evaluate that, assess that, we can bring you a recommendation, say, hey, in this particular area, this has happened and we need to respond now, not wait another year. So you have that ability to do that under our structure as fit here.
Very good.
And then secondly, we had a lot of conversations about the doe removal or doe harvest removal and looking at that, in particular between West River and East River deer seasons, as Andrew just went over. These are just rounded up numbers, but between those two seasons, West River and East River, we reduced by 4,000 licenses and approximately or just over 7,900 tags. So we're going to see some substantial reduction in some units, right, in response to what deer populations are doing out there, opportunity. Some of that is moving some different license types around, but there's certainly some reduction of licenses and tags out there, in particular between those two hunting seasons. So just wanted to give you that quick overview also.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
To follow with that too, if there's like a hemorrhagic disease die-off, which we've seen before, there's the opportunity for us to remove unsold licenses as well as the opportunity for hunters to return those licenses, which okay. We've done in the past.
Yep, very good.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Commissioner Spring.
Tom, do you know, like you were saying, the amount of reduction of licenses, percentage-wise, what's that going to hurt the wildlife deal as far as money coming in? I mean, is that going to really put you in a tight spot, or where are you at on that?
Madam Chair, Commissioner Spring, that's a great question. Certainly, It all also depends on the type of licenses that are reduced, because a doe tag is at a different value than a buck license, for example, and those things. Does it have a financial impact? Yes. Especially when you talk about these many or this many licenses that we're removing and associated tags. But I think the more important question is it necessary to do? And our belief is yes, from the management of the herd. And because that is the important piece of this, that is the necessity of bringing these changes to you based on our conversation, observations, and the information that we have obtained. So this is not a financial decision. This is a decision based on managing deer numbers, and in places where we want to reduce harvest to bring those numbers back, or in places where it is to increase licenses a little bit and tags for management to keep it where it's at, or start to decrease the numbers a little bit. So these are all decisions based on the management of the herd or the deer themselves. We'll figure the financial piece out, but this is more importantly focusing around the management of deer.
I want to thank the department for doing this, because it's crucial for the future. Thank you much.
Any other questions or comments at this time? Looks like there are none. All right.
And Madam Chair, there needs to be action on this, I believe.
Yep. We need a motion and a second.
Also moved.
Moved by Bartling.
So moved.
Oh, seconded by Locken. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? It is approved. So that brings us to the end of our finalizations. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
We are going to wrap things up for the day. It is almost, it's 4:50 Mountain Time. We'll continue tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. And with that, we will be in recess.